everybody. Welcome back to the podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. I am so excited. A milestone episode number 300, baby. Prepare for glory. Jacob Bannon of Converge is the guest. Could not be more excited. I've been a huge fan of Converge since like the 90s. And Jake's a guy that doesn't do a ton of interviews, doesn't put himself out there all that much, a private person, but he was super, super forthcoming and honest. This is a great episode, one for the ages. I have so many people to thank. First of all, you, sitting right there listening to this, thank you very much for tuning in. Whether this is your first time listening to the show or you've listened to all other 299 episodes, doesn't matter. Love the support. Thank you so much. If you want to support this thing, if you want to help out the show, check out the All Access Club, leadsingersyndrome.com/all access for a small monthly fee. That helps me out and you get a whole bunch of bonus content, bonus episodes, merchandise, access to an amazing community of other fans of the show. Check it out. leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. Check out our sponsors as well. All that really, really helps out. Be sure to follow at leadsingersyndrome on Instagram and follow us on Twitch. twitch.tv/ShaneTold. I'm on there regularly. Me and Mr. Mike Howell do a weekly show. It's a podcast too, called New Noise, where we talk about all the new records coming out. It's a good time. And mash that follow button so you can keep these episodes coming at you, because we aren't stopping. This isn't the final episode. I've got big plans for 2022. I am super, super excited. Thank you so much for being on board. So yes, I say prepare for glory as an inside joke to myself, because when I saw the movie 300 in theaters, you know, this is Sparta and CGI muscles and Gerard Butler and you know the movie. Well, I went to the ticket taker and he was this little nerdy kid and I gave him the ticket and he looked at it and his eyes widened. He went, prepare for glory. And he ripped my ticket and gave it back to me. And every time I think about this movie or the number 300 at all, I think of that moment. So yes, prepare for glory. I'm so excited for this episode. So let's get into it. Here it is, episode 300 with Jacob Bannon of Converge.
I'm on the back of a bus in Albuquerque. My voice is a little sketchy at the moment, so thanks for bearing with me.
No problem. It sounds like a perfect scenario to do any sort of talking. So,
well, I'm sure you've lost your voice a handful of times over the years.
I have. You know, I actually only typically it's from talking in. It's always been talking in sort of louder environments.
Right.
I don't really lose it from playing per se, like a show or performing in any way, but it's usually from that. And the only thing that actually helps is that no matter what anybody says, like there's actually no remedy aside from hydration and sleep.
Yeah.
That's it. I've tried a million things on a million trips and nothing works except for just that, because it just has to repair. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm here with Jacob Bannon of Converge. Honored to talk to you, man. Been a big fan for a very long time. Somebody I've wanted to have on the show forever, and I'm excited to talk to you at kind of a cool time in Converge history. Would you agree with me?
I mean, I guess like that's that's up to fans of our band. I'm not somebody to have, you know, I don't have self accolades like that, you know?
Right.
I think that we're always being productive. We're always doing, at least to us, interesting things that are fulfilling to us, you know, and relevant to us that just, you know, make us fulfilled in some way creatively. So like anytime you get us is hopefully a good time. But yeah, right now we just worked real hard on a record, and you know, you're getting us at that time. So if that's your thing, then cool.
Totally. Well, you're downplaying it a little bit, but this thing is something else. Blood Moon Volume 1 out now. Just for people that don't know, I mean, you've basically started a new band, added a whole bunch of new elements to this. It somehow still feels familiar. How did this all come to be?
Well, you know, years ago, and I'm talking like, you know, like 99, 2000, like late 90s or whatever, Kurt, the Converge guitarist, and myself would talk often about just, you know, musical ideas and things. And I remember back then a specific conversation that we had where he was just talking about the idea of bringing in more instrumentation into our band in some capacity.
Right.
And, yeah, so we were talking about that way back when, and, since then we have done that to a degree, right? So like,
sure.
we've always brought in different things, but most folks who know our band typically consider us like an abrasive band, an aggressive band, and we are that very much so, but there's also a lot of dynamics in what we do, and you know, a lot of what I would call like surface level listening of our band doesn't really allow for those things to sort of happen. You know, like if somebody, for example, is a modern music listener, they're probably hopping from, you know, like track to track in some sort of, you know, digital playlist. And if we keep their attention, which I don't think anybody has an attention span in the world in that kind of, you know, in that environment, because it's true. It's like, it's a hard environment for somebody to listen to a full album. A lot of those sort of dynamics get, you know, they don't get lost, but they just don't get experienced. So,
right.
So we've been working on that and having that in our songs for a while. But we wanted to do something, just bigger in terms of collaboration, you know, like, where we've been a band for like over 30 years. And so when you're like looking at that kind of time frame, things become, even though they might not be predictable, they may become formulaic in the sense that like each person kind of has a certain role that they've kind of within the creative body of the band. And we all kind of work within our lanes and it works well. But we wanted to do something that just really threw that rule book out entirely.
Yeah.
And the idea of bring in true collaborators. And I'm not talking about like guests. I'm talking about like writing partners, you know, editing partners, like really like getting out of our comfort zones. Like we felt that would be a really cool way of expanding the capabilities of what our band, you know, is/was. So, so we just started working towards that idea and kept it on the back burner for a bit here and there while, you know, like other things, you know, took precedent. But then when all the sort of planets aligned, it seemed like and we, you know, got together with, you know, Ben C and Chelsea,
yep,
and Steve, it just made sense, you know? So at that, we started doing that. I guess we started talking to Ben and Chelsea in around like 2009, 2010, just as peers and friends. And I did a split record with one of Ben C's, projects that he does on his own with one of mine, and we just kind of stayed in creative contact.
Yeah.
And he worked on the Where Your Wounds Rest on the Gates of Heaven album with me, and also in that time he Kurt produced and engineered a Chelsea record for them, and we've had a good sort of slow friendship build over that time. And so eventually I'll fast forward a little. we were offered the opportunity to do some stuff at Roadburn Festival. And for folks that aren't familiar with Roadburn, Roadburn was one of the most interesting sort of heavy festivals out there. And one of the things that they do is they truly curate it and commission music. And Walter from Roadburn was like, "Oh, we'd love for Converge to be part of it. And, you know, just do something unique, whether it be a, you know, full album set," which is not uncommon now. Bands sure. have been doing that for a long time. But just something just different. And that sort of rekindled our idea of trying to do Converge Blood Moon in a more serious capacity. So Kurt at that time went into the studio and put together some alternate arrangements for some existing Converge songs. And then we went out and we invited Ben and Chelsea and Steve to be part of that with us. And they were really excited once we sent them the demo ideas. And then then we started like working for it. And then we did some shows. We did like 3 shows together. We really enjoyed the experience. And then started writing basically right after that. And that was 5 years ago.
Yeah. So when you get in a room, like for the first time, is it a bit nerve wracking? I mean, it's been the same, you know, 4 of you in the band for over 20 years. And obviously, you know, Steven really well. But how did that feel when you first got in a room to be like, all right, we're doing this?
I think just exciting. I think for everybody, especially at first when we all knew each other creatively, but not really personally, you know? So, it takes a little bit of time to figure out, you know, who's going to just figure out each other's personalities and character, you know, but we all went into it with the intention of, you know, being fully open with the creative process. And that's, you know, exciting and challenging. So like all of a sudden, like, you know, you're like, you're taken totally out of your wheelhouse because, you know, you're just doing something that you haven't really done. You know, that was like a super exciting thing at those European shows that, you know, a lot of people who are experiencing Blood Moon now don't know this, but, you know, the idea of Blood Moon is that, you know, it's a 7-piece band, but we're all multi-instrumentalists. And so we're switching instruments all the time during a Blood Moon set.
Yeah.
So the staging is very fluid. You know, there's some songs that, you know, like I'm playing bass, there's some songs I'm playing guitar, there's some songs I'm just singing, there's some songs that Nate's playing acoustic or switching to, you know, a different guitar or a different bass. Everybody, sometimes Chelsea's just singing, sometimes she's playing guitar, sometimes she's doing both. It's very fluid like that. And all these songs are sort of structured in that way as well. You know, that's why I like the sort of musical voices change quite a bit because everyone's doing a little bit of everything. And that's something that's really special, you know, just kind of like throwing the rule book out and being able to have that kind of freedom rather than be sort of locked into the basic roles that, right, that people are just seeing us in.
Totally. Well, I mean, you know, coming from being that you've been in Converge for 30 years and you started, you know, when you were high school kids or whatever, you know, you'd get in a room, you turn up the amps and you jam and that was the song, you know? So nowadays, like it's a lot different, but you know, I didn't know you were, you know, a guitar player or bass player. How's that kind of been incorporating that into the music, you know, on your own? Or is that something that you've kind of always done?
I've always done it. Every once in a while when we're practicing and working on riff ideas, like and whatnot, like in writing, like, you know, I'll sit there with something, you know, with a bass or usually a bass, you know, and just sort of like show the guys like an idea I have here or there or whatever. But my perspective is a lot different than listeners of our band. You know, I started this band as the bass player, you know, like when I was a kid with a drummer and a guitarist. Like I had no intention of being a vocalist. I don't consider myself a vocalist, you know, like, I fell in that role only because, you know, we had plenty of bass players and plenty of guitarists, and somebody had to sing, and so that was just like the role I got. And so I've never been fully comfortable in that role, you know. So, and I probably never will be, you know. That's kind of, I guess that's part of it. So like being able to play other things on stage with this band to me is a cool thing. And, you know, it's not to say that I'm going to throw out being a straight vocalist all the time now, but it is cool. And it's definitely something that I really like doing, and, you know, not being just the vocalist in a band.
Yeah, it must be nice to have some songs off too, where you don't have to scream your head off and run around the whole time, right?
Well, you know, like a lot of that, here's the thing, like a lot of that movement and like physicality and stuff comes from me being like super uncomfortable. Like, I don't want to be there, you know, but like, it's like too late to not be there, you know, like I can't really rewrite that aspect of what our band is. It's just not really, it's not realistic. So I just kind of always accepted that role as being somebody who's doing that. So, you know, it is what it is. Like, life could be a lot worse, you know? So I couldn't have a creative outlet at all. Right.
Right. Right. Absolutely. I also heard you guys recorded the drums last, which is a pretty, you know, recent modern recording technique. I assume that was the first time you'd ever done that in Converge.
Yeah. And we didn't want to do that. But, you know, the pandemic gave us a lot of challenges, you know, one of them being travel. So, Ben, our drummer, lives in California now. So it made, just in studio tracking quite difficult for us, when the pandemic hit. So we had plans to all be in the studio together for a number of weeks in the spring of 2020. Basically when we were all coming off of a bunch of tours, and we were going to do that.
Yeah.
Then the pandemic crushed all those plans. And so we were in a holding pattern for a bit. We weren't sure what was going to happen. And then we just decided to all start working remotely on the record. And I think the most challenging, I'm sure Kurt would tell you a lot of other technical challenges, but, you know, one of his big ones was, you know, like, okay, well, if we're going to work on this remotely, we have to tempo map this record and tempo map it in a way that it's not just like a song snapped to a grid, which is what most modern songs are now. That's why you have, you know, remixes galore, right? Because everything's snapped to a grid at like whatever beats per minute it's supposed to be. We still want it to be fluid and natural and organic and, you know, have tempo shifts that were very human. And so he spent a lot of time doing that and basically building that. So at the end, Ben was actually playing to something that wasn't on a grid at all, which is kind of fascinating.
Right.
Where it's like there's a click for him to play to, you know, and he's familiar with the songs already, but it's not, it's moving all over the place. You know, it's not, he can't just get locked into a, you know, whatever, like 100 beats per minute and stay there or something. It just wasn't going to fly. So yeah, it was probably a huge challenge for him. But yeah, you're right. A lot of modern records are recorded that way. Now a lot of pop records, especially.
That's super interesting. Wow. That's cool. Yeah. Like, you know, obviously people will kind of humanize like a slow down part, like a ramp down or ramp up to get faster, but for it to be completely fluid, that's super unique. Wow. I wonder how much you would notice, you know, in listening to a record, that way, how much more life it gives it.
Well, it gives it a ton of life. Like if you listen to any sort of, basically that's tough. There's always been some form of a grid, you know, some sort of metronome, you know, even like, you know, classic rock bands would have a metronome track going in some capacity, and they would just sort of drop it for certain points and then reintroduce it in other points of the song and stuff. So like there's always like a level of that, but with our band, we've always been pretty loose with that in the studio. You know, like if something feels like if we can feel the tempo changing in a way that we don't really collectively like, then we'll, you know, we talk about it and try to, you know, like correct that. But more often than not, we just let it be human, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, this year marks 20 years of Jane Doe. Obviously your most famous record and an album that, you know, still gets talked about, referenced. People are discovering it all the time. Recognized as one of the greatest heavy music releases of all time.
It's funny that you look at that, and I've told you, I've talked to people with reflections on that record or whatever. But like one interesting thing to, well, there's a lot of interesting things about that record to me. But one of the interesting things was that when we actually put the record together, like it wasn't celebrated at all like that. You know, like when we released that record, people didn't care, you know, like it didn't.
I cared. I definitely cared.
It definitely got more bad reviews and bad reception than it did good. And that's just the reality of it. And that's fine. Like, we don't care about reviews and stuff. It's, to me, it's interesting that a record that at the time was polarizing, became something that people celebrate now. You know, it's just the interesting reality of that record or whatever. What was your question? I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, I guess the question was, did you know it was going to be something that we would be talking about 20 years later?
I mean, I don't think of anything in those terms. So like, I don't think that would be talking about anything that I'm a part of in any way. That I'd be sitting with any sort of audience and talking about it. It's just not the way I'm wired, you know. Like I don't look at art and music that way. Like, to me, it's not like a legacy thing, you know. It's not like a It's not like a legacy thing. It's not an ego thing. I just like making things and expressing myself and being, you know, like moved and connected to, you know, creative things like art and music. So like, I don't get self-reflective like that. Typically I just sort of make something and move on. And, you know, if an audience connects with it, that's super cool. You know, I'm really appreciative of that, but it's not the goal. You know, the goal is just to be, you know, and just to, you know, just to make something, you know, honest and pure. So when we made that record, yeah, I mean, it was a weird, turbulent time for our band. Probably one of the more turbulent times we've ever had as a band. So like my experiences in that time are very different. Like we, at the time, we just shed a member and Aaron Dalbeck, and
yeah,
Aaron's a good guy, but he's a good guy, but it wasn't a good fit anymore. And that was, you know, that was emotional for all of us. And, you know, it wasn't an easy experience or process to go through. And then, a lot of the recording and writing in the record was sort of, a bit mired in that subject, because like we were working hard on something creatively. And unfortunately, like he didn't have the sort of like ability and time to devote to it like we were. So like the three of us were, and so that was frustrating. So the creative process was a bit frustrating. And that's why there's one of the main reasons why we asked him to leave the band at the end. It's like, you can't show up late and leave early.
Right.
You know, not know your stuff. It becomes a drag for everybody, you know, especially when you're making something creative. Like, you know, you're putting everything you have into it, you know, and like it hurts when somebody's not on the same page, you know.
Totally.
So that was a tough one. I just don't really reflect on the record as being that significant. I don't think it's our best record, you know what I mean? But I appreciate the fact that it has an audience and that people connect with it. It is what it is.
Yeah. Wow. Thanks for explaining all that. It also came out at a pretty crazy time in the world, right? It came out like a week before 9/11. So that must have been...
Yeah, that was definitely strange. I mean, we left for a tour that week, too. You know, our New York show at CB's was obviously canceled. I remember still driving through New York City and seeing the skyline and seeing all the smoke and smelling it from where we were. I remember we played Connecticut, I think we played Connecticut.
Wow.
And then we drove through the following day. So we were like 48 hours out. It was a heavy time, for sure. But like, what isn't, right?
Yeah, right. What isn't? We've had another pretty crazy time this last year.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like socially, we've probably lived through more in the last 2 years than a lot of times within our band. You know, it's been pretty significant for sure. And it's funny. It's also paralyzed our band. You know, like we were able to make a record in that time, or at least, you know, we started the process before it, but you know, we completed a record in that time, and like that's just. Just the fact that we were able to do that kind of blows my mind sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what's going to happen moving forward now? I mean, you've got obviously Converge and Converge Blood Moon. I know you're playing Jane Doe, I think in December in LA.
Probably the last time we'll do that. Like we don't right. like doing those things. I mean, we like playing shows, but the only reason why we're doing it is because Albert asked us from Decibel, and he's a very, very supportive guy of our band, has always been super cool to us. And so it's a thank you to them to do it, you know? But yeah, we're not a band that's going to go do like tours on records or things like that. Like we won't go and do like, I don't see us doing an anniversary tour on something. It's just not our style as people, you know, like we just want to do play songs that we like playing all the time. But what's going to happen is there's basically two versions of Converge, you know? So you have regular core Converge, for lack of better terminology. And, you know, we just keep doing what we do, as long as we feel motivated to do so, which we still are, and we still are, you know, writing music and planning tours and whatnot, and doing just being an active band. And Blood Moon is now an extension of the Converge world as well, where we view Converge Blood Moon as its own 7-piece band, that will, you know, continue being productive and, you know, making music and art on its own. You know, it's, yeah, that's kind of like the way we look at it. And I think whether that means like we make, you know, like 5 more records, 1 more record, 10 more records is Converge Blood Moon. I have no idea. You know, we'll just keep doing things as we've always done them, you know, and, as long as it feels right, we'll continue to go down that path. But yeah, I'm excited that we did it, because we're not definitely not the first band in the world to ever want to branch out and do different things. You know, it's been done countless times within all genres of music, but it's something that we always wanted to do. And, you know, 5 years in the making is a significant amount of time. So I'm down with any forward movement on that front.
Have you started writing, I hate to say, like more traditional Converge songs for an upcoming record? Has that been kind of kicked the tires on that at all? Or what's the plan kind of for the next thing?
We always have things going on. We have things going on in regular Converge. We have things going on in Blood Moon. All of our related bands of our universe out here all have things going on as well. We're all just trying to be productive in this like really interesting time for creativity, you know, because still like we don't know what live music is going to look like, you know, and like live music has been such a big part of our band forever. You know, I've toured every year since I was 16 years old. I'm 45 and I didn't tour for basically the last like 2 years, really, you know, and that's fine.
Was that tough on you? I mean, you know, do you use this as an outlet for, you know, an escape, or did you need the break after that long of, you know?
Well, it's not so much an escape is that, I mean, like Converge is a very, or it has been by, at least by like the way I look at it as a very, it's a very personal thing for me where I would, you know, work out a lot of emotion and a lot of sort of like trials and tribulations that I was feeling at any particular point in time. I would work it out through that art and music. You know, that's why it's always been a personal band. That's very different than a lot of like the sort of typical, you know, heavy metal bands or hardcore bands that sort of just like go through like certain metaphors and motions, you know, and just like, just do their thing. Like the songs are like deeply rooted in me, you know?
Yeah.
At least, you know, lyrically. So that's been a really important part of my life to be a functioning adult, and a functioning person, even before I was an adult. Right. It's always been my outlet. So not having that has been a huge challenge. So it's not a matter of missing it. It's just more, it amplifies a lot of the sort of psychological deficiencies that I have without art and music. And I think everybody has that to some degree with something in their lives. You know, sometimes it's a creative thing. Sometimes for some folks, it's fucking fantasy football. You know what I mean? I don't know. But, I mean, who knows what it is? But like for me, it's art and music. You know, it's just like, it's just kind of like what's kept me, I guess like kept me going in a bunch of ways. So it's caused me to reevaluate a lot of things in the way I make art and music, and also reevaluate, just like sort of like relationships and that I have with it, and, you know, relationships I have within my life that are like positive or negative. It's like, it's been a big reflecting time. Do I miss it? For sure. But like, there's also aspects of it that I don't miss at all. You know, like people will always have different kind of generalizations and assumptions as to like what traveling as part of a band is. And it can be a really magical and wonderful experience, but there's a lot of loneliness too.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, like there's a lot of like, it's great to see peers when you're touring and have like certain like, you know, bonds with folks, and you get like good acquaintances and friendships out of stuff sometimes, but like there's also a lot of time alone and a lot of time waiting, and why you could be doing other things in your life that could be productive. I don't know. It's just weird. Your relationship changes with it after a while. Like things that were like super romantic and adventurous and fun when you're like, you know, 18 and 20 have a different turn at different points in your life. And so, so I'm kind of like in the midst of like sort of reflecting on a lot of those things now. But it's unique to everybody, you know, like you could ask that question to everybody within our band, and you probably get different answers as to what their experience is with it.
Absolutely. No, that's well put. I mean, you yourself, you have a bit of a mysterious personality. I don't know if that's weird for someone to tell you that. But talking to you,
I don't think I am, because like I'm pretty open.
You are, though. That's the thing. I was just going to say,
I would say like, I'm actually, it's strange. It's, I'm open, but I'm not. And in a sense that like, I'm very open in my music and art and creative stuff. And that's where I put that there. And like, I don't really like try to explain it past that very much, because it's all there, you know, it's all in like the art and music. So like to dissect it a lot of times, like when folks ask me to dissect this or that, or like, I usually don't do that because it just kind of like, I don't know, it's like, all right, I can liken it to a bunch of ingredients in some sort of food, right? Like when somebody enjoys a thing that they are eating, do they now have to know exactly all the ingredients that go into that thing, or do they just enjoy
right.
the thing, you know? Like, and a lot of music journalism tends to go south, where people start to just ask for the ingredients list of what makes you you. And like, that doesn't really interest me because I haven't figured that out myself, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So like, it's a weird thing. So like, that's why like, I'm like very open and approachable, but I guess some people would think that like, I'm not, because I'm not like, I don't really entertain that kind of, breakdown of art and music very much.
Yeah. Like you are open and approachable. Like when I have you on the phone, I'm talking to you, but I just imagine a lot of people, they're like, oh, that's Jacob Bannon, the guy that writes the dark emotional lyrics, you know, and does all this art. And then there's kind of like everyday Jake. I don't know. I don't know if you like see that.
They're one and the same. And I think that division sort of happens just by the relationship that people have with your art and music, or like, you know, whatever is sort of accessible to the public. And that's not just like unique to me. I think that's just like anybody that makes stuff that people are curious about. Like, people want to start unpacking who they are, you know, past that. And like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm probably just as deeply flawed, or more so than, you know, anybody else in the world. I just happen to make stuff that people look at and listen to sometimes, you know? But like, I don't have I've met people that are creative people that like want an aura, you know?
Right.
And like, I don't, you know, like, like I don't. And I never have, though. It's not like it's because I've like had my fill of life, of creative life, and now I'm good. It's just like, that's just not what it's ever been about for me. You know, like, I just like to kind of put it into the work and then move on, you know?
So, okay. So then other than making art and music and writing, what else do you like to do?
Well, I spend time at this point in my life. I spend time with my family. You know, I spend a lot of time with my wife and my two sons, and that's where my priorities are right now. I've done a whole lot of other things. I boxed for a long time. I practiced Muay Thai for a long time. I was an art teacher for a little bit when I just got out of college. I was a licensed MMA judge in the state for a while. Probably still am. I have to check that. But like, I don't, you know, like, I ride bikes a lot. That's pretty much it. You know, I think I'm just like a normal person, but like a lot of the creative time, a lot of my daily time is taken up by like doing creative things or like promoting other people's work
for sure
that I, you know, that I believe and want to support. So like a lot of my time is kind of, yeah, it's just kind of like enveloped in that world, as you said. But like, I try to leave it at home. Like, you know, leave it at work. Like when I leave Death Wish, at the end of the day, I go home and I try to turn my phone off and put it in airplane mode until the next day, you know, and just kind of like unplug from the earth. You know, that's like,
it's great
what I try. Yeah. Cause like, I don't know, that's, I listen to a lot of podcasts and I read a fair amount and listen to a lot of books on tape. And that's pretty much where I'm at this point in my life.
I love it, Jake. Well, man, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me. The last thing I want to ask you about is this recent Jane Doe thing with the model Audrey Marnay kind of, I don't know, just saying, hi, I'm Jane Doe, and that being kind of a strange thing to happen 20 years.
Now that, I mean, to me, that was super interesting and great, like, because, like I don't think I've seen, like, a reference for that work in probably 20-something years.
Yeah.
You know, it was, like, probably, like, one of the, like, the first, you know, like, dozen or two things that I put together for a band in that style. So, you know, it is what it is. That's like how I've always made work, you know, like I always reference stuff. I always build stuff. All my pieces are crazy mixed media pieces like that.
Yeah.
Still are. And yeah, I mean, the only thing I didn't like about that experience was that, like, there's an assumption that, like, you're not communicating with people, and, like, that was kind of weird because, like, I didn't ever get a, like, no, I was never given, like, a, like, I was never reached out to before then, you know what I mean? So it's sort of like you get, like, you sort of almost, like, get, like, put publicly on, like, blast to sort of, like, defend your work rather than be like, yeah, I totally referenced you. And, like, this is crazy. I didn't even know that this existed. This is awesome.
Right.
Let's talk about this. And then you're not really given that opportunity because then the whole world sort of, like, chimes in with their opinions as to, you know, like, of what art is and what art isn't, you know? And, like, I don't know. That's just, like, is what it is. Like, I still, like, got a, you know, a slide projector and, you know, right here where I project things on the wall all the time. And I make art based on that. I have scraps of thousands of pieces of paper that I Xerox and tape up and do India ink washes on and gouache washes. I mean, this is, like, my artistic process. It's just, like, the void mind over time. But no, art, like, you know, we've been since then, we've been in communication with her and just going to be like, hey, just make sure that she's, you know, aware that she's not being exploited and she's being, you know, taken care of in life and there's no ill will, you know, like, that's the most important thing for me is people to understand what that is. And it also explains, like, there's a visual component in 2021 going to 2022 that didn't exist when, like, way back and when I made that record, what, 20 going on 21 years ago or any visuals where, like, that piece and that cover is part of a, you know, it's like a large, big, at least large for me, because I don't typically make too many giant projects, but I think there was like 20 or 25, like super kinetic, collage pieces through that whole record, right?
Yeah.
And all the packet. But now in the way people process music now, you don't really get that interaction with a package anymore. So, like, life, like an album cover really takes a life on into its own. Like, it takes on a life of its own now more so than it ever did before, where, like, your experience was usually multi-layered before. You know, you would kind of, like, get into it and see that it's, like, part of this, like, big,
exactly,
bigger thing, you know, and now you don't. And so it makes visuals much more iconic than they used to be. Things become almost like little snippets that define your character for better or worse, just is what it is. It's the way the Danzig skull works. It's the way the Misfits skull works. You know, Dwid's Integrity skull is the same. They're all like, Garrett's Plain Mistaken for Stars skull is the same. It's like, they all become like these, like, unique identifiers over time. And you kind of, like, don't have control over it. So you just have to embrace it. And that's, like, the way that, like, we went with it. Where, like, as a band, I remember, like, years ago, like, I had no intention of ever doing anything with it aside from just the album cover. And like, Nate was like, no, go find that original, like collage work piece and see if you can pull out, your like painted face. And I was like, okay, I'll try that. And I remember we did it and we went and played, we made some shirts for a show. And that was kind of like the beginning of that visual kind of taking on its own life entirely. I remember the show. It was a show at a college with American Nightmare. And I think it was like in 2001 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it was just like a freak thing. And I remember Wes sitting there and going like, this is awesome. I want to wear this one forever. This is like so cool. And I was like, rad, man. I'm glad you dig this visual or whatever. But yeah, it's interesting how that works now, you know, like how things can kind of grow over time and kind of become their own animal entirely. But yeah, so like, you know, it is what it is. It's, you know, it's the internet.
I mean, for you, you know, as a label owner with Death Wish and putting out all kinds of releases, that obviously like the art is super important to you. You know, collaborating with the bands and figuring out that art direction.
Yeah.
I mean, now, like, does it kind of suck when you know half of it's just going to be like a square thing on Spotify and that's all it is? Like, does that bother you?
No, it doesn't bother me because my identity is not, as a person, isn't like wrapped up in that. It's funny. Like, there's like a point where like I really enjoyed that. Like back in the day, I really enjoyed making CD packaging and like elaborate CD packaging, mainly because it felt like a book and it was like something that you could hold in a way that wasn't sort of cumbersome like an LP was, you know, and you could kind of do interesting things with it because of its size. And that was like a really fun time to come up as a designer and, you know, learn how to design within the confines of that style packaging. And like I learned how to tell visual stories that way, you know, and like, and really try to, and cause I still do, I do design work and, you know, art direction for bands inside of Death Wish and outside of Death Wish every day. That's what my primary job is. Like, I don't even consider myself I'm not a fine artist. I'm just sort of like I'm a artist, but above all else, I'm probably just like an art director and designer, you know, and like I do art because it's been sort of some jobs call for it, you know?
So
like it's a weird thing. So I don't miss it, but I really enjoyed that time when there was physical media. It just changes the way you design things, you know, and like everything is essentially a little poster now, you know, and they are, in the sense that they have to have all of the qualities out of the gate where you're not allowed to tell that visual story anymore.
Right.
You know, it has to be all sort of defined within one image.
So in a way it makes it a lot harder, I guess, right?
Just makes it different.
Yeah.
Nothing's hard. I don't think any of it gets hard when you start like agonizing over details, but like, it's just a different way. I mean, in some ways you make less work, but that's, you know, you just focus more on the, you know, on the key things. Whereas like before you could have a great record is as an example. I don't know if you're familiar with the band Modern Life is War.
Of course.
But they're a wonderful band that I really appreciate and been fortunate to release a bunch of music for them. And
yeah,
I designed their Witness album for them. And that record is, I believe it was like a 30 something page booklet that told a really interesting visual story. That really defined that record and the spirit of that record and the spirit of Jeff's lyrics and that band. And I couldn't have really done that with all of the visuals that were provided by just doing like a solitary cover. Like,
for sure,
to me, the cover is really understated. Like, the meat of that is inside of that record visually. So like, if somebody sees the cover now, they'll probably just be like, oh, it's just this photo of like oldie timey Marshalltown.
Right.
And that's it. It's like, no, that's just the beginning of that record. The whole thing is just,
exactly.
It's a monumental art piece. And so I do miss doing that all the time. I miss it all the time. I miss that being the process all the time. But it's just a different world we live in now. And I've accepted that fact and kind of moved on.
Absolutely, man. Well, Jake, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Thank you so much. I do have one final request, because this is episode 300 of the podcast. Every 100 episodes, I ask someone to pick a new theme song for the show. 100 episodes ago, I had William Duvall and he picked the Bad Brains. And that's been the theme song for the last 100 episodes. What do you think? If you had a podcast, what would be a great theme song to get this started? I'm putting you on the spot, I realize.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, it depends what you're into. I wouldn't want to totally define what you do. What Bad Brains?
Well, I can always just say no if I don't like it.
Yeah, that's true. You could do that. Let's see, what kind of folks do you typically talk to? I'm just trying to get a glimpse of your sort of audience. And
I think folks that would enjoy Converge, or maybe Silverstein. You know, the Bad Brains has been the theme song the last 100. Before that, it was Rise Against was the theme song for a while, and Tim from Rise Against picked the theme song for a while. So that's how we do it.
What did he pick?
He picked Bed for the Scraping by Fugazi.
Okay. All right. I'm going to pick, this is a hard one. This is a hard one. I'm going to pick Crooked Mile from Planes Mistaken for Stars.
Oh man, that's a great one. And I think I just got word the other day that Garrett passed away. Is that correct?
No, he hasn't passed away. He's very sick. He's a good friend of ours.
Okay.
But that record is a really, really special record, and it's got a lot of really cool moments on it. But that's a really powerful song, and they're a really special band that never fit in anywhere, and that's what was so great about them. They were like this, they were a square peg in a world of round holes, you know, like, and they always just sort of did their own thing. And if you got it, you got it.
Yeah.
And if you didn't, you didn't. But it's just so soulful and raw and pure. That record especially. I think that's just like a good entry point song for a lot of folks who might not be familiar with that band. So I would suggest that.
No, I had a Planes Mistaken for Stars shirt I wore on stage for many years, and we got to finally play some shows with them, and they were just such nice people too. So,
oh yeah, they've always been like the coolest folks. So like, we've always been tight with them. The whole Converge and Deathwish world have always been really tight with them. So,
absolutely. Yeah, well, all the best to Garrett. Hopefully he can get through this.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Jake, thank you so much for that and everything today. And best of luck with the tour next year with Meshuggah. That's going to be a lot of fun. And everything else, man. Congrats on Blood Moon.
All right, man. Thank you for having me.
Take care, man.
All right, you too.
So there it is with Mr. Jacob Bannon. Incredible conversation. I want to thank him so much for taking the time and doing this. And there is some sad news. Garrett from Planes Mistaken for Stars did pass away in late November. I want to extend my deepest sympathy to his family and friends and the entire Planes Mistaken for Stars camp. We lost a truly amazing musician and person. And starting next week, we will have a new theme song from Planes Mistaken for Stars. Since this is such a special milestone episode, number 300, I never thought I would ever get here. There are so many people I want to thank. From the early days, Nick Bunda, Mike Mowry, and Matt Carter for believing in me. My publicist, Amy, my editor, Josh, Mike Howell for being an incredible co-host, and most of all, every single member of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. My sinners, I seriously could not have done this without you. Your support means everything. I cannot wait for Sinnerfest. Whenever we're going to have it, I cannot wait. I will see you all there. Once again, follow us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ShaneTold, Instagram at Lead Singer Syndrome, and don't forget to hit that follow button, whatever you're listening to this on, okay? Hit that follow button right now. I'll wait. Did you hit it? Okay, I think you hit it. Thank you so much, everybody, for 300 incredible episodes. As always, I will be back next week. Cannot wait. In the meantime, I will leave you with a tune. Here is a new one, my personal favorite track from Blood Moon. Here it is, Converge and Chelsea Wolfe, Lord of Liars on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next time.